up, I'd like to introduce Claire Coleman, who's the president and CEO of the National Family Planning and Reproductive Health Association, or NIFRA. And her title today is The Nexus of LARC Use and STD Testing.
Thanks very much. It's nice to be back. Hi, everyone. I'm going to be a lot lighter on data than our colleagues, but wanted to talk more from a systems level about how biomedical innovation has the impact on health systems as well as on people's behavior and decision making. We're going to talk about the increasing prevalence of LARC, and I'm just going to go. Right, so the data in front of you are from 2002 through 2012, showing that LARC is increasingly popular, IUDs much more so than implants. But this data through 2012 shows that women of reproductive health age, this is still at about 12%. Many of our family planning safety net systems around the country are leading LARC initiatives, but they are really part of a comprehensive strategy under the CDC, Office of Population Affairs, Quality Family Planning recommendations that came out in April 2014 to look at expanding access to quality contraceptive services across the board. So across family planning systems, we're looking at collecting or examining data to establish a baseline around LARC utilization and understand the barriers. A lot of the LARC barriers are around training and reimbursement. So a huge emphasis on comprehensive training and availability of LARC in every health center every day, particularly this spring and summer as Zika concerns began to roll across the systems. The initial emphasis was on, are you ready to provide the full range of contraceptive methods to every patient every day? Or is the one nurse practitioner who does LARC there on Tuesdays and Friday afternoons? So really thinking about the workforce and the availability. And then a lot of emphasis recently on postpartum LARC, led by some really great work done by ASTO through their LARC collaborative with the state health departments. Finally, a lot of work with Medicaid. And this is, you know, about reimbursement, but also about the policies in state Medicaid programs and direction from CMS about what can be done to increase the uptake of LARC for the patients that want to be using a long-acting reversible method. So, of course, it's reasonable to assume that LARC is going to grow in popularity, but oral contraception is still the absolute dominant method of choice for women across the systems. Okay, so let's jump to chlamydia STD rates among women over the same period. I just want to say that these charts don't exactly match up. So this chart has data from 1994 through 2014. It's 20 years of data. The chart that I just showed you was 10 years of data. So if you're trying to think about matching the first to the second, start kind of in the middle of the page, because roughly the middle of the page is 2003. So as you see, starting in about 2010, rates of chlamydia begin to level off. That's just after the big leap we saw on the previous chart. The big leap in LARC utilization was from 07 to 09. And then just after that, you start to see this. So it would be great if we had data to compare condom use among LARC users and condom use among people who use other contraceptives. We don't have that data. So we're using often proxies to try to make some suppositions. But when you look at what we have, there does not seem to be a huge correlation. Again, LARC, by 2012, only used by about 12% of women. It's hard to imagine that that kind of percentage could be driving a large change in STI rates. Okay, this is our screening rates. So what about LARC and screening? Again, would be great if we had comparison data here to look at LARC users and non-LARC users and how frequently each group gets screened, but we do not have this data. We have screening rates for sexually active women in public plans and in private plans. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. Okay, out of the charts for a little while, gang. So is LARC the villain? Is LARC the villain? Let me go back and say first, or I'll go back, sorry. Let me just talk a little bit more about this. I said we have some data between private plans and public plans. I want to talk a little bit more about what we've seen and what we might anticipate having happened. So when you look at how STI rates are dropping here, so you're watching the blue line at the top, you see that the Medicaid screening rates drop between 2013 and 2014. There's lots of interesting stuff here for us. This is the beginning of the full implementation of the Affordable Care Act. So states had the option to expand early. Now, of course, about half the states have Medicaid expansion. States had the option to expand early. A number of states did so. 2014 is full implementation. So many new enrollees, almost all new enrollees under the ACA Medicaid expansion went into managed care. So we've got to layer into the public plans the new complication. Lab arrangements, unclear in many jurisdictions. How are they exchanging information in Medicaid managed care? How are they paying for services? We had a lot of new provider networks. So there was a big learning curve around how providers would properly submit data and claims, and very poor coordination among a lot of these Medicaid expansion managed care plans. There's one more thing I want to note that's unique to family planning, which is in Medicaid, patients have freedom of choice. So they may be assigned to a managed care plan that they do not choose. They are automatically enrolled by the state, but they have the option to go to their provider of choice as long as that provider accepts Medicaid. Medicaid freedom of choice for family planning means tracking is even harder, because what often will happen when people go out for freedom of choice is it's possible that Medicaid never gets billed. And it's absolutely the case that per person, you know, per month per person, never gets tracked back to the assigned Medicaid managed care plan. So when we look at this dip in the blue line, the Medicaid screening rate in 13-14, we think it has a lot to do with some of the disruptions in Medicaid and may not be something that over time will prove out. Last thing to mention, as we look at this data, there were changes to screening guidelines, again, around this same period. So prior to 2012, women 21 years and older were encouraged to get an annual Pap test. We've still got colleagues around the country who are telling people they have to come in for the well woman exam. It's not recommended anymore, but it's still being pushed out. Now women are told to come less often. Screening intervals have widened depending on the testing. And so it is absolutely possible that we're going to be screening people less often. So now I'm going to move it. All right, so let's talk about the enemy and the villain. We in Safety Net Family Planning are going to dispute the premise. We don't think that LARC is a villain or the villain. It still accounts for 12% of contraceptive utilization by 2012. We don't have the comparative data. During that period, STD rates level, not seeing a big increase. It's important to note, of course, and when they called in and asked me to think about doing this presentation, the first thing I said is the dominant forms of contraception aren't barrier methods. This is not a new consideration. More than 60% of American women are on oral contraception. Never been invited to this conference to talk about STI rates and contraception. So let's really not focus on LARC as being the new villain. And as my colleague Dimitri said, contraception is not meant to prevent all. It is meant to effectively prevent pregnancy by the method of people's choice. It should be patient-centered, it should be evidence-based, and it should be ethical. So what can we do? There's so much that can be done, and some of it is relatively low cost, some of it a little bit higher. So I want to talk a bit about what can be done to change things. So this is at the health center level. In intervention, I'm going to talk about what providers can do, what health centers can do, what networks can do. So here are some interventions that might work particularly well. This is from a paper published in February by many of your colleagues, M.M. Taylor, the lead author, but Jessica Fraser-Williams and a number of other colleagues on this paper. Screening rates can be increased at the health center level by doing simple things like having strategic placement of specimen collection. So this is about how the rooms are set up and how consistently they are set up. I can tell you from the family planning perspective that every single nurse practitioner likes her supplies set up a certain way. So you go through this big rigmarole about where things are going to be and where they can be found. If every room is set up the same way and specimen collection material is readily available, clinicians are much more likely to test a patient if they don't have to go looking, especially if they don't have to leave the room. But that notion of the sense memory of reaching back really makes a difference. In systems that have EHR and in safety net family planning, we're still at about 60% of systems at EHR. That's as far as we've gotten to date. An EHR that alerts clinicians that the time is right, she's due for an STD screen, the same EHR systems can generate patient notifications, so text messaging, automatic calling, and still postcards to remind people that they're due. These have an impact on people coming in for care. What can we do with our workforce? So inside the health center level intervention, there are things that cost more money. So we can train staff to engage in opportunistic screening. So they have a twisted ankle, you should screen. They come in for a migraine, you should screen. They may come into settings less often, so we've got to get them when they come in the door. And to be effective at this, everybody in the health center has to be ready to go and understand when screening can be done and should be done. If they don't get how to screen opportunistically, they won't do it. When they're promoting opportunistic screening, we have got to keep working to dispel the notion that screening equals pelvic exam. It's not true. NAT testing, preferred, effective, does not require a pelvic exam, just a urine sample or a vaginal swab. You know that better than me. What can we do at the systems level? So here we have a couple of examples that I think are really interesting. Again, clinician engagement, training, kind of buy-in essential, and this can be done across specialties. So I wanted to talk about two examples. One's from Kaiser Permanente, a closed system. Dimitri talked about them as well. The home office developed and disseminated an STD testing toolkit and guide, and it went out across the system to all the practices, regardless of specialty. It outlined a uniform protocol about how to test, and when, and the toolkit was reinforced in the EHR. So it would prompt clinicians to order STD testing when it's due. It sent that message regardless of practice types. So it sends a message that to Kaiser, STI screening is important, it's a priority, it's something that they're focused on. And clinicians were told repeatedly they were expected to test regardless of their specialty. Very important to get people engaged and recognizing their obligation. The second example is from the Family PAC program, which is California's Medicaid family planning program, the largest Medicaid family planning program in the country. In this case, the medical director collected data on how good individual practices were at STD screening. This work was led by Dr. Michael Policar, who's a professor of OBGYN at UCSF. He is NIFRA's clinical fellow. They produced a scorecard that publicly compared practice performance so that practices across the Family PAC program were able to see how they were doing vis-a-vis their peers. In many cases, seeing a bad score was enough to prompt change in practices. Where it wasn't, Dr. Policar's team at Family PAC provided technical assistance to improve the performance in the Family PAC program. So that's at the family planning intervention level. So LARC, probably not changing STI rates. Chlamydia screening rates have improved since 2000. They're still suboptimal. We recognize that. We think our primary care counterparts need to come to Jesus as well. The drop in screening rates in the Medicaid system, which is increasingly the dominant payer for low-income people since 2013, we think is attributable to a lot of factors, so we're not panicking yet about that slight drop. And then finally, women using LARC methods may in fact be seen less often, but they should not be shamed or led to believe that they're doing something wrong when they follow nationally recognized clinical standards. We need to instead focus on opportunistic screening and shift the way we think about people's behavior and interaction with the health system. And we think health center, provider, and system level changes can all increase testing rates and are all necessary. Thanks for having me.
Okay, again, we have some time for questions. So if anyone would like to ask Claire a question, please step up to the mic.
Thanks very much for drawing that link between screening and the changes in the cervical cancer screening programs. There's beginning to be a little bit of literature on this, but I think it's really underappreciated. Because as we know, it's the teenagers who have a lot of the chlamydia, and if they're no longer going in for their well-woman exams, you completely miss the asymptomatic infections. So I encourage you, if anybody has data, go through it, look at the age stratification in your screening, and see what's dropping off. I know where we are in Canada, we are seeing that we're screening fewer and fewer women under 20 years old. So.
It's a point very well taken, and just, again, some data from the Title X Family Planning, the federal family planning program. Our biggest drop, we've seen a significant drop in patient load because Congress has seen fit to take a major cut out of this program over 5 years. We've lost 1,000,001 patients in 5 years out of the program. The biggest single drop are among young people.
Claire, thank you. This is Joan Chow from the California Department of Public Health. I'm so glad that you are highlighting the critical role of family planning providers nationally as safety net providers, particularly in the post-ACA era. And I appreciate that you pointed out how well we've been doing with screening rates in general, in family planning in particular in Title X. But I think I also heard from Matt Golden's talk that he is really, really advocating for other avenues of STD prevention based on promoting LARC use in family planning. And one area that's very, very intriguing is to actually think about promoting the prevention of congenital syphilis among women who are at risk, and using LARC potentially as a way of making an impact, I think, on some of those serious increases recently. And the second thing I would like you to comment on is family planning providers are increasingly interested in doing outreach to MSM populations in order to promote access not only to rectal screening, but also as a gateway for PrEP. And I was wondering, at the national level, how is NIFRA influencing, I think, their policy so as to promote family planning as a gateway, not just to congenital syphilis prevention, but also for making an impact on uptake of PrEP in MSM and also high-risk heterosexual populations. Thank you.
Two-part complicated question. So I just want to say a word about promotion of LARC and targeting for LARC. Because just as LARC rates began to rise, you saw this corresponding wave of what we think is something very troubling, which is this notion that LARC is now the magic answer, the silver bullet, just as 10, 20 years ago, emergency contraception was seen as that in the contraceptive field. There has been, as LARC has become more possible and more paid for, there has really been an increasing wave of concern about coercion, population targeting, acknowledging the impact of institutional racism across our systems, acknowledging the provider trust issues. I mean, we have providers across our network that will not do LARC because they don't think it's safe. And, you know, by not entering the room and having conversation about the historical legacy and the lived experience today of racism and targeting of minority populations, communities of color, and other vulnerable populations, I think we are in a tough space. So it's one of the reasons why we look really carefully when state health departments tell us that they have a LARC initiative, because public health departments care for the poor. And so we are really concerned about LARC initiatives that are focused on low-income people and have been trying to balance what LARC can be for people who choose it and what it ought to be as a, you know, part of our broader toolkit. Second part of the question was about how are we thinking now about STD screening and opportunities to engage with broader populations. I think the Quality Family Planning Standards that came out in 2004 represented a new wake-up call and an opportunity for safety net family planning, Medicaid-funded, Title X-funded systems. You may not be aware that until the 2014 standards, it actually wasn't clear whether we had to screen across the board and then whether we had to treat. And this was really a question of how much money we had. So some systems were screening for some STIs and not for others, and some were treating not at all. The new guidelines say STD services, and it's explicit that screening and treatment are combined. Now, having said that, we've been cut significantly over the same period. We have some insurance opportunity, but our public health funds have dropped, as yours have. So I think there are opportunities to move more towards a sexual health model. It will be appropriate for many practices and not appropriate for all. And so at the national level, we're engaged in thinking about how can we promote implementation of these expanded recommendations around STD services, and candidly see it as a business development opportunity. The notion that a family planning center that's been really focused on women might shift to become a sexual health center of excellence is something that is very intriguing to a number of our systems around the country. And so we're trying to support that, but also translate that knowledge across the country.
Sorry, that's all the time we have for questions. And you can see Claire afterwards.